Я считаю, что было бы правильно, чтобы съезд поддержал кандидатуру председателя партии Владимира Путина на должность президента страны.
Мы победили! Слава России!
Россия без Путина! Россия без Путина!
More than half a year of political turmoil reaches something of a conclusion on May 7th, when Vladimir Putin will be inaugurated as Russia's president for the third time in 12 years. But the wild ride that began with the announcement at the United Russia Congress in September that Putin would return to the Kremlin has left behind a dramatically changed country in its wake. The decision for Putin to return to the presidency was not universally welcomed by the Russian elite, which now finds itself deeply divided over fundamental questions like how the country should be governed. Adding to the general zeitgeist of change, the previously apolitical urban professional and creative classes have gotten into the act and have demanded a seat at the table and political reform. This, in turn, has energized the long, ineffectual opposition, which has turned its attention to local elections with a fair degree of success. The countdown to Putin 2.0 is underway. How will Russia's paramount leader govern under these changed circumstances? Hello and welcome to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. In the studio with me is my regular co-host, Kirill Kobrin, managing editor of RFERL's Russian service. Welcome, Kirill.
Hello.
Before turning to Vladimir Putin and the challenges he'll face, I'd like to start with outgoing President Dmitry Medvedev, whose curious four-year stint in the Kremlin ends on May 7th. It's been easy and perhaps justified to dismiss Medvedev as a political lightweight, a placeholder who kept the Kremlin warm for Putin's return, and who is now destined to become little more than a historical footnote. But Medvedev's little presidency with an asterisk could actually turn out to be quite consequential for Russia. This is true less because of anything he accomplished in office, and more because of the role he played, the way he played it, and the way the ruling class and the broader public reacted to his time in office. Despite his weakness, or perhaps because of it, Medvedev unleashed political forces in the elite and in the society that appear to have acquired critical mass. Whether by chance or design, he temporarily became a vessel for the hopes and aspirations of the rising creative class, as well as the technocratic wing of the ruling elite, which has been playing second fiddle to the Siloviki clan of security service veterans for nearly a decade. Medvedev may now be a diminished figure, but those unleashed hopes and aspirations remain and are searching for a new vessel. Would you agree that this is part of Medvedev's legacy, Kirill? Despite his weakness, he's left behind a changed country.
Well, first of all, we can't speak about the legacy in full because no one knows what will happen to Dmitry Medvedev in the future. He is he's 40-something, 48, 47.
Yeah, late 40s.
Yes, he is old and no one knows what will happen to him. Secondly, I'd like to divide his so-called historical role or historical legacy into the two parts. Mm-hmm. And both of them are positive.
Uh-huh. I'm surprised.
Both of them.
You're going to play the optimist today.
No. The question is positive for whom and for what? First of all, of course, Medvedev played a positive role for Vladimir Putin and all his circle, Siloviki and all this ruling Russian elite. He was kind of substitute president. And he fulfilled all this task very, very, very good from this point of view.
You mean in terms of keeping the current elite in power,
in
facilitating Putin's return?
Yes. Technically.
In a strictly technical sense, I would agree with you. But in a broader sense, I would say...
Then we'll go to this point. But I want to stress this. Technically, in some very narrow and pragmatic sense, and we told already in the previous podcasts, we were telling a lot of things about the pragmatism of ruling Russian elite, mm-hmm. and their pragmatic tasks are the most important ones for them. So in this sense, the Medvedev term was very, very, very successful.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first point. Second point. Second positive role of Medvedev's term is positive for Russian society and maybe future some kind of democracy progress and so on. Because, first of all these hopes and wishes that, as you told, of which Medvedev was kind of vessel, they focused on Kremlin. They focused on Kremlin. It was a long, it was one of the signs or one of the aspects of a very long Russian tradition. If you want something to change, you focus all your hopes and wishes on the Kremlin.
The or top maybe, down vision of
yes,
change,
or yeah. In the imperial times on the Winter Palace.
On the Winter Palace,
yes.
Yeah.
So, and Medvedev, if he really wanted to do something, he failed, absolutely. It was not a liberal, in any sense, time of his presidential term. For instance, a number of political prisoners during the Medvedev's term increased in comparison with Putin's one.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people who are now in prison accused by all this special amendment extremism
laws. Yes. Yeah.
Don't forget that Magnitsky case
happened on Medvedev's watch.
Don't forget that Pussy Riot
happened on Medvedev's watch.
Yes, and Georgian War.
Yes. Very early. It's one of the first acts of him.
I can recall a lot of things that happened during the Medvedev's term. And I think that he did a very good job pretending that he is a liberal or whatever and that this is kind of Medvedev's otepel. But in reality, things are absolutely opposite. We are not trying to discuss now the public opinion or public hopes during the Medvedev. Mm-hmm. They changed dramatically. But the politics itself, not the rhetorics, but the politics itself was still the same as during the Putin's term.
But I would say this rhetoric, and you're right, the amount of political prisoners increased and a lot of things happened during Medvedev's watch that in our minds almost we psychologically associate with Putin.
No.
But they happened on Medvedev's watch. But his rhetoric, the changed zeitgeist, and I would not just dismiss his rhetoric because rhetoric has consequences, but his rhetoric, the general zeitgeist that changed ignited certain things. Yes, the amount of political prisoners went up, but so did the amount of dissident activity in society go up. You saw things like the YouTube cop, for example. You saw viral videos of things like that. Appeals on YouTube to President Medvedev.
It's not because of Medvedev. It's because of the technical progress and the widespread of the internet and so on in Russia.
Don't you think that there was more of an atmosphere where people can get away with these things now, where they couldn't get away with them in Putin's first term?
I'm absolutely sure. And plus to all these things, plus the economic crisis.
The economic crisis added to
this.
Yeah.
And what do we have in the end? A total disappointment. And that is, I think, in some kind of strategic sense or meaning, it's a very positive thing for Russian society. Because Russian society, in the end of Medvedev's term, they disappointed not just in the president, Medvedev himself, but in the idea that they have to focus all these hopes and wishes and so on Kremlin.
Uh-huh.
You know, on the president, on the figure of president, and so on. They just not understood. They are beginning to understand very slowly, but the process began, that the main thing is how do they cope with their life themselves, and how do they react to this life and to the regime, to this all this political, for instance, police brutality and so on.
And they're doing so in very creative ways now.
Yes.
Rather than relying on the person. So I guess we are kind of in agreement here, because I would argue that Medvedev's legacy was twofold. it ignited this civil society. It reignited it or ignited it. It, as you put it, caused it to take matters into its own hands rather than hoping the good czar will fix everything. That's one. And the other is inside the elite. We can't forget what happened inside the elite during the Medvedev time. During Putin's first stint in the Kremlin, now there were always clan battles in the elite. There was always intrigue. There was always competing interests. But these things were more over who gets what. What happened during Medvedev's presidency is the elite began to become divided about how Russia should be governed. There were segments of the elite that felt that, and we're not talking full democracy here or anything, but we're saying that the system should be made a little bit more responsive, a little bit more pluralistic, a little bit less top down. And this feeling was shared by people inside the elite, which gave these aspirations in parts of society a little bit of validation. So these two things are here to stay.
I think the problem with the elite and the division of this elite is that Putin directly hooked them, all people in Russia who have substantial money, is somehow hooked by secret police, by FSB, by police, by various political structures or military structures, and so on. Putin's terms, 2004 and 2008, was a time when all these people, they made money. And now
they want something more.
They want something more. Maybe just to relax and to enjoy them. Don't forget about this psychological thing. But a lot of them want to enjoy their money and their life and to relax inside Russia, not in London.
Right.
Not in Berlin or New York or whatever.
But what are the implications of that? The implications of that, if they're to relax and enjoy their money in peace inside Russia, that means a more liberal Russia.
Yes, for sure. Yes. But I'm not going to exaggerate all these feelings inside the elite, because if it comes to their money itself, and if it comes to their, you know, position itself, their division will be forget. Mm-hmm. Will be forget. I'm absolutely sure. And the source of a new public activity is not there, is not in the elite, inside the elite. It's in Russian regions, and it's in Moscow, St. Petersburg, and some other big cities, creative class.
I would argue it's in both places. I think you have to have both for real change to happen. I mean, I think you can have these aspirations bubbling up among the creative class, which, let's face it, are about 30-40% of the population. You know, I mean, if you really give it its widest berth, I think for those aspirations to be met, you do have to have allies inside the political elite. And some of the things that I found really, really significant were that key people in not just the broader elite, but the inner circle, had different ideas about where things should go. It's very clear now that Surkov, the architect of sovereign democracy and the power vertical, that he had a different vision about where this should go. And he was disappointed by the direction Putin and Medvedev took last September at the United Russia Congress. He wanted Medvedev to come back. He wanted a slightly more pluralistic Duma. To quote Gleb Pavlovsky in a recent interview with the Guardian, he said that Surkov was somebody who understood, possibly the only person in the Kremlin, who understood what the system could handle. And he understood that it couldn't handle an experimentation with Putin returning. That would destabilize the system. And so you had somebody, that key a figure, Alexei Kudrin, another key figure, okay, another member of the inner circle, another member of what we commonly call the collective Putin, the people, the Politburo, the inner sanctum that Putin listens to. Kudrin, more than anybody else in the elite, understood what the system could take economically. And now he's not been exiled, but he's sort of exiled himself. These two key figures are kind of on the outside now. And ironically, in the case of Surkov, are more in tune with the desires of the creative class. So this is what I mean when I say the elite is divided, and these two are just the two most important figures of many in the elite that have different ideas about how Russia should be governed and how it should develop. And I'm not sure, and this is something I want to return to in the second half of the podcast, is can Putin reconsolidate this elite?
Just one point about Surkov and Pavlovsky. I thought a lot of about them, and I can say that my conclusion is that the problem with these people is that they took their own rhetoric too seriously, mm-hmm. and their position too seriously. Surkov, of course, he was and still is a pragmatic politician and political technologist or PR specialist, mm-hmm. And so on. But he really believed, and I think still believes, in all this rubbish about sovereign democracy and so on, because he thought a kind of a statesman. And that is the problem with Pavlovsky too. Because he thought and still is thinking as a statesman, a man who is thinking about a recent state of the society.
Precisely, but for that reason, he understood that the system did have to be, for lack of a better term, liberalized in a very conditional and controlled and managed way. Because he saw these forces in society coming, I believe, and he felt that the system, in order to preserve itself, order to preserve the current elite and to preserve the current system broadly defined, the system had to soften up a little bit. The system had to give more of an illusion of liberalism and pluralism, and he was thwarted because there were the other side of the elite, the Siloviki side of the elite, the Sechen wing of the elite, feared that. Because they feared that could become something that could spin out of control very easily.
I think that the part of the problem is that those who used Surkov and Pavlovsky, they used them as a tool, not as a statesman.
And they felt that they were more important than
them. Yes, they used their ability and their talent for their rhetoric. Mm-hmm. Of some kind of rhetoric, because both of them, they are specialists in words. Mm-hmm. They, all these Siloviki bankers, whoever around Putin, they desperately needed words, clever, witty words, serious words about Russia, about future of Russia, words for inner consumption and for foreign consumption.
Mm-hmm.
But now, and that is a very dramatic change, and now they don't need these words. They just don't need these words. And this is very dangerous. Very dangerous as for ruling elite and Putin himself and for Russia as a state too. Because, first of all, these words, these special ideological, political words, whoever, this rhetoric, is focused on the lack or vacuum of the ideology which left after the Soviet Union collapsed.
This is another common theme that we keep coming back to.
Yeah. No any society in the modern world, even after the crash of the ideologies themselves, they cannot live without kind of traces of ideology. Neoliberal ideology, nationalistic ideology, whatever. But they have to do something, they have to think something and to say something about the state of their society, future state of the society, or the reasons why they're acting this and this and this and so on. So all this mechanism of the reasons, of the beliefs, of the hopes and so on, which we try to describe with one word, ideology, mm-hmm. it still exists in every society, but
it's
not
political
in Russia.
Culture, as yes, what you would call
yes.
it.
But in Russia, we don't have, or in Russia, they don't have such thing. And Surkov, Pavlovsky, and some other, Chadaev, who left United Russia political party just a few days ago, they tried to reinvent some kind of ideology or political culture or whatever, or just the lexicon. lexicon, mm-hmm. or some kind of list of words to use during the discussions about Russia and its role. And now all of them, they are off the ruling elite. And now ruling elite and Putin, they don't have the words. I can mention the famous speech of Vladimir Putin before the elections in Luzhniki.
Mm-hmm.
It was absolutely terrible. It was absolutely terrible. It produced such a awful impression upon everyone. Liberals, conservatives, whoever, because it was just some kind of, I don't know,
it's crude populism.
Yes, it's crude populism, but it wasn't successful because no one can understand what's going on. Why on earth this guy is speaking about Borodino?
Right. Yeah. No. It was a bizarre inciting
Lermontov and so on. This is the disaster of political culture.
Well, one of the, and this is something I do want to move to in the second half, is about consolidating society and about the elite's role in that. But one thing about the tandem, the much derided tandem, that was actually, I would call almost a constructive element of the politics, is that Putin and Medvedev, and I mean this during Medvedev's presidency, they appeal to different instincts in Russian political culture. Medvedev appealed to the more conditionally liberal technocratic instinct, where Putin appealed to the more nationalistic and populist instinct.
Sorry for interrupting you, but Medvedev's audience was also Shestidesyatniki,
the Soviet liberals.
Yeah.
The Soviet liberals. These two together in the tandem, and this is not my original thought, this is Sean Guillory, a scholar at the University of Pittsburgh, wrote this in his blog a couple of years ago, and I think it was just a very insightful observation, that Putin and Medvedev at that time, and I'm talking 2009, 2010, were almost like two sides of a Hegelian whole in the elite. And I think there's something to that. And if you remove, and Medvedev's not being removed, he's going to be prime minister, but he's going to be very diminished. If one of those is out of the picture, you're not the Hegelian whole is no longer a Hegelian whole anymore. And is this a problem?
I think yes, because this is a real problem, because Putin, and we are going to the next step of our conversation, as I understand, about the future. Putin has to cope somehow, to rule somehow all this country, I'm stressing, all this country, next 6 years. At least. I'm hopeful that not, but at least. The problem is that all Russia is not just workers from a Uralmash factory.
Right.
And all Russia is not just, I don't know, regular policemen in Kazan. And regular general in Moscow.
Right.
And regular banker connected to KGB, old KGB.
Seems to be appealing to a society that existed maybe 10 years ago, and that segment of society still exists today, but now there are new elements in society that he seems completely out of step and out of touch.
Absolutely. He's absolutely disconnected with the society itself, even in the case of Uralmash factory. Even in this, his appeal to so-called working class and plain people of Russia,
right,
and whatever, he don't know what is it, plain people of Russia. He don't know what they are, workers of Uralmash or Gorky Automobile Plant District or whatever, because he's not connected even to internet.
Right. Or at least he says he's not connected to the internet.
Yes, he watched the TV, but TV is controlled by himself.
Himself, right? So he's watching himself.
It's kind of political solipsism.
In a few moments, I want to get a little bit more into these, into some of these challenges that Putin faces, particularly whether he'll be able to unite the elite and whether he'll be able to unite the society. I'd like to remind you that you're listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name's Brian Whitmore.
Moore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. In the studio with me is my regular co-host, Kirill Kobrin, managing editor of RFERL's Russian service. I'd also like to remind you, you can read the Power Vertical blog at RFERL.org. You can subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes, and you can follow us on Twitter at Power Vertical.
Клянусь при осуществлении полномочий
президента Российской Федерации.
That, of course, was Putin and Medvedev taking the oath of office in previous inauguration ceremonies. When Vladimir Putin was sworn in for the first time 12 years ago, in May of 2000, he faced a divided society and a fractious elite just like he does now. But then, much of society and the elite also yearned for stability after the chaos of the 1990s, making Putin's task of consolidating them much easier and giving him much more room to maneuver. Today, that task looks much more daunting. Kirill, do you think Putin could consolidate the elite right now, which is divided over, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, fundamental issues of governance? Or are these divisions in the elite here to stay?
I'd like to compare two presidential terms or two periods of Putin's rule, from the 2000 till 2008 and from 2012 to somewhere. The first period, it was about, as I absolutely agree, about consolidation, but the consolidation on the basis of something. We need to unite because it was said in the beginning of notice. We have a kind of dangers. We have problem with Chechnya. We have the problem with invented, of course, by Surkov of disintegration of Russia.
We have an economy that's crumbling.
Yes, economy and so on. So we need
pensioners not getting paid, state workers not getting paid.
Yeah, whatever. And that was an idea of a kind of new, powerful Russia, which is returning to the world scene.
Mm-hmm.
Now everything is over because Chechnya is still a problem, but is of absolutely another kind of problem.
Right.
Yeah? Secondly, the international role of Russia cannot be increased in any way now because Putin, speaking frankly, failed to do this. Mm. Failed. Russia is no more a world power, really. It's even not an influential neighbor of Ukraine and Belarus, because you know all these things about Yanukovych. Russia depends all its politics in Ukraine on Yanukovych. Yanukovych won, and what do we have now? Putin suggesting to move Tymoshenko to Russian hospital from Ukrainian prison. Is this a sign of special relationships? No. Thirdly, economics. In this sense, it was a total failure. Of course, some people made money.
You had a decade of growth.
Yes.
You had wealth spreading. Largely, this was thanks to high oil prices, of course.
Yes, but it's not about the reconstruction and not about the modernization of Russian economy.
No. It spread more money around to more consumers and basically bought off a large section of the population.
Absolutely. So the only success is it was in the kind of
macroeconomics.
Macroeconomics and the kind of consumer behavior of Russian population. Mm-hmm. Of course, Russians, a lot of them, maybe most of them, they're crazy about consuming. This is
they're not alone in that one.
Yes, but they're especially crazy. Look at the Russian tourists in Europe. That is the kind of substitute of the real, as we told, state ideology. Mm-hmm. It's a substitute, by the way, of the real religious belief. And that's why I'm very uneasy and dubious about all these talks about that Russian Orthodox Church is very popular in Russian among Russian population. So, no. And thirdly, of course, Putin for sure, he succeeded in moving Russian money to Switzerland and to London. And Boris Johnson, who I think had been elected yesterday as a London mayor, has to be very grateful to Putin's Putin decade and Medvedev decade in this sense.
For increasing his tax base.
Yes. But not Londoners, because of the prices of the property prices and so on. So, returning to Russian politics. So, in all these senses, excluding this consumer's behavior, Putin and Medvedev failed. It's absolutely a failed decade or 12 years.
Now, that is counterintuitive to how this has largely been presented, because the last decade has been perceived, whatever qualms you may have about the backsliding of democracy and things like that, as a decade where kind of Russia got its financial house in order, it achieved macroeconomic stability. It did not re-achieve great power status, but it did have more of a role in the world than it did in the 90s, for sure. So in a relative sense, this decade was seen as a net positive, and this largely accounted for a lot of Putin's popularity, that and the macroeconomic stability.
And don't forget that initially Putin had a very good team with him of the economic specialists, Kudrin, you mentioned, just mentioned him, and so on. But not now.
Yeah,
and not now. This is another problem with the new Putin's term. Where are all these people who will?
What do you see him doing? Do you see him? I mean, you mentioned the Luzhniki speech, which was a very crude populism appealing to a very narrow, the resentments of a very narrow segment of society. Does he do the same thing in the elite and kind of go with a very tight group of his pals from the Siloviki? Or does he try to reconsolidate the elite and bring back your Kudrins and what have you, to bring the technocratic wing back on board? Which direction do you think he'll go there?
Well, in this area, I can only imagine.
We can all only imagine.
Yes.
But
first of all, in psychological sense, I think that this Siloviki, they're older than it was. They were in 2000. As bankers and financial oligarchs and so on, I think they just want, or many of them just want to relax and to enjoy their money and the position.
So you think he can buy them off?
Yes. Secondly, what about the technocrats and so on? Do you find them now in contemporary Russia? There is no new generation of them. All of them, they are from the generation of Kudrin and Kasyanov and so on. But there is no any new real generation of specialists in economics, politics, or whatever, who want to serve.
Okay, that's the key phrase, who want, because I would say I believe that Russian universities have been producing economists and specialists over the last...
Putin's era nearly destroyed Russian higher education. I think we have to speak about
this. We'll have a whole podcast on that
someday. Yes, because it's a very important thing. I am, as a former lecturer in a Russian university, I worked for 14 years in the university in Russia, so I know somehow the situation there. So it's almost disaster there, almost disaster. Of course, we have a very good Moscow higher school of economics. Mm-hmm. We have some kind of remains of RGGU, humanitarian University of Humanities.
Yeah.
We have a very good European university
in
St. Petersburg, and but not bad Smolny College. Mm-hmm. By the way, Kudrin is a rector of the Smolny College in St. Petersburg. He understands what's going on in Russia, and when I think he is a real patriot of Russia, in some sense, and he's understanding on what things he has to focus on in his activity. So, but instead of these universities and higher schools and some others, maybe in Russian regions, others are in a desperate situation, absolutely desperate situation, and they are used as a kind of, reservoir for people, for local and Moscow administrations. And they produce them all the time, but they're not talented. I'm not speaking about all Russian people, but they're not just talented, but they're specially talented. They're not educated in the proper modern way.
So you're saying there's a cadre crisis on the way.
Yes, кадры решают все.
Кадры решают все, but and they're not going to be there to решать. You know?
Yes. So I don't know who will come to work to new presidential administration and new Medvedev's government. By the way, don't forget about the history of United Russia political party itself. They hired a lot of young people.
Mm-hmm.
All of them, they are graduates from the philosophical faculty of Moscow University, mm-hmm. Chadaev, and mm-hmm. some others of them. I am not discussing the quality of the
right.
and so on. But anyway, there were young people who came to United Russia political party and did something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see a new generation the there.
Yeah. That would be actually a good discussion for a future podcast, and it kind of segues into the other thing I wanted to discuss before we finished up here, and that is that consolidating the elite's only part of the picture. 12 years ago, much of society was ready to get behind the new president when Putin first came to office in 2000. Today, that task looks much more difficult, to say the least. How do you see Putin dealing with a re-energized civil society? How do you does he try to accommodate it, or does he go back to his almost KGB past instincts and try to suppress it?
As we saw in this winter, his first reaction was just not to mention them.
Yeah.
Just not to mention them.
Ignore them and hope they go away.
Yes, yeah. His second reaction was very aggressive, this speech in Luzhniki and so on. And now the question is, if the opposition leaders, a new generation of opposition leaders, can organize somehow all this energy of the protest in some kind of political movement and so on. And I'm very curious about this. I fancy if they can do something with such divided and different groups from nationalists to leftists and liberals and so on. If they will find some kind of figure who can unite them or to prepare some kind of foundation or basis for all this movement. In this case, I can imagine that Putin will react swiftly, brutally, and he will fail.
He'll fail.
Absolutely. I am absolutely sure. Because as Lilia Shevtsova, you know, this very, very good political expert, he wrote in today in Gazeta.ru website, he wrote that the revolution grows not from the desperate conditions of living conditions of the population. The revolution, revolutions grow from the disappointment, the wide political or public disappointment with the state and authorities, as it was in February 1917 in Russia, as it was in 1789 in France.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the real conditions of living and so on.
No, it happens when expectations are disappointed.
That's why I told about the positive role of Medvedev's role.
And Medvedev helped to raise these expectations, and now Putin has to deal with these expectations, and we'll find out where he's going to go with these expectations.
Having in mind that he's absolutely disconnected to society.
Having in mind that he's absolutely disconnected to society, so he has to deal with the expectations in a society that he does not appear to understand right now. That's all we have time for today. I would like to remind you that you've been listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. In the studio with me is my regular co-host, Kirill Kobrin, managing editor of RFERL's Russian service. I'd also like to remind you that you can read the Power Vertical blog at rferl.org. You can subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes, and you can follow us on Twitter at Power Vertical. And join us again next week. And for now, I leave you with the ambient sounds of my favorite socially conscious Russian rapper, Noize MC.